So next up is a person who is no stranger to the BSCB, and that is Meg Robertson, who is the director of orientation and mobility for the MCB. Whenever Meg comes and speaks to us, it's always interesting, but I anticipate it's going to be especially interesting now because of how unusual these times are. So Meg's going to talk to us a bit about orientation and mobility challenges in this time of pandemic. Welcome, Meg.
Thank you, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you. Thank you.
Just checking. Well, I hope everybody's doing well. It was nice to see a lot of the names that I haven't talked to in a long time. As this was mentioned earlier with your previous speaker, these are interesting times in regards to a lot of the accessibility and issues that are coming up are ones that we've never had to deal with or anticipated that would be an issue. So a lot of it is problem solving as we go along and looking how to move forward and adapt and where we can advocate so it won't be an issue moving forward. One of the big things is, it hasn't been too much of an issue in regards to people staying in. A lot of the orientation and mobility issues are now moving or becoming more of an issue because now we're being allowed out and have a lot more access to things that we haven't had in the last 2 months. So we're going to end up discovering more issues as we move forward. So I guess prepare yourself. Something's going to be an issue that you really didn't expect to have. One of the things that people are getting confused about that I'm realizing is social distancing and the mask. So the social distancing is not wearing a mask, staying 6 feet away from whoever you might be trying to stay away from. And for the most part, a lot of people in this group, a lot of legally blind folks can't maintain that six foot distance, mainly because of a vision issue that they can't judge how far a person is. So that means you wear a mask. And wearing a mask is, I found an art at this point on trying to figure out what masks work and what are the different issues that people are having with a mask. So you really want to try to maintain 6 foot distance when you can. But if you are out and about, you should be wearing a mask. One of the issues we found that was raised up to me was some people are having trouble with masks because it's affecting their facial vision, which I was kind of really surprised about. So I'd be interested when we have a question and answer period if what people's experience are in wearing a mask. I have found certain masks to be very irritating to my face. And other masks, I've got a good fit, and I have a variety of different masks now for different things that I'm doing outdoors. So you really want to keep looking for masks and get a variety of different masks. And when you find one that you like, that may work really well for you all the time. I have ones that are like neck gaiters that I pull up from my neck over my nose and mouth. Nothing that affects your ears, that covers your ears. So you really want to be sure that you have your ears open and well fitted around your nose so it isn't fogging up your glasses or sunglasses if you do wear that. But it some of them are very loose fitting and some of them fit very, very well. And again, you have to try a number out. My sister had made a couple of masks for herself and realized she had a really small head. So she had to remake them to make them a little tighter to go around her head. So you really need to kind of have a bunch of masks moving forward because you're going to be out and about. The other issue we ran into is for people who depend on a guide when they are in a grocery store or need a guide in an unfamiliar area. In the past, especially at certain street crossings too, that are complex, a lot of people have had guides and asked strangers to guide them. And I think moving forward that we are going to see less of the public being willing to be a guide because of they want to maintain the 6-foot distance. So that is going to be a problem. What we found in stores, in grocery stores, what has worked, and we found a number of folks who are still doing their own grocery shopping. They take an Uber to the grocery store, and then they do set up with the grocery store management of somebody that will assist them, and they use the cart as their 6-foot distance, that they're pushing the cart, and the person who is doing the guiding is pulling the cart from the front. And that has seemed to work for a lot of people. And I don't know if other people have tried that. One of the other suggestions in the Orientation Mobility Department at the beginning of this that we started talking about is that you may not want to hold on to someone's arm because a lot of people have been now told you cough or you sneeze into your arm. So if you're holding someone's elbow or close to the elbow, that could open you up for contamination. So you might want to do is put your hand on their back or their shoulder. But again, the shoulder is closer to the mouth as well. So you may want to follow them with just putting your hand on their back if they're comfortable with that. I'm trying to think what the other idea we came in. Doing a voice guide is having someone give you a voice guide and you're following them. That they're in front of you and they're giving you a voice guide, but you can follow them. And also you need to give maybe more direction to people who are assisting you so they understand what information you need. And don't assume that they know that you're going to hit that thing on the right because you veered a little bit. So you may want to give a lot more people that are strangers who have never guided you before a lot more verbal information and support to them so they feel that they're guiding you correctly. As we go forward, the transportation, as mentioned with the earlier speaker, is I'm not sure how the transportation is going to work because I'm concerned that they're going to be changing the rules as they get more people on transportation. They have said that they're loading certain bus routes are loading people from behind, but that's also a way for people with disabilities that need to go into the front. So you can also, and the MBTA has stated this, if you need to go in the front, you can certainly go in the front. But you may have to advocate a bit for yourself. Right now, we haven't heard of any issues that people have had with the MBTA for those people who are using it. We don't know how the transit systems are going to work in the trains, the subways, because depending on how many people are going to be using the trains, they may be queuing you up differently. You may have to wait in the lobby before you go down to the platform. I haven't seen any plan on how they would do that. And one of the other issues we anticipate is that they will line you up. You have to go to a certain place and line up where the doors are, and you can't go possibly to your usual door. They have that as the exit door, and then you go in another part of the train. Again, I don't know how that is going to work, and I've seen nothing from the MBTA at this point. And I don't know who's been using the transit at this point. Most of the people I know have been staying home and they've been doing Uber or Lyfts and not using their regular mode of transportation. So that is going to be something we're going to have to develop some policies and procedures once we get from the MBTA in regards of how they're going to do it. There may be some adaptations that we can advocate for in regards to people so they don't have to go into a certain line. They may have an adapted line that you go as a person with a disability, but I have no idea if the TIAs really figured this out at this point. So that is something we are going to be dealing with in the future, I anticipate. One of the things at the commission we've been calling, we haven't done any direct O&M training at this point because of the stay-at-home order. So we've been calling clients and talking to them about their food options, if they have food, transportation issues, if there is a transportation issues, and trying to problem solve with some consumers if that is a problem for them. So we're going to be in the next few weeks, we'll probably be starting to see some clients in person. And as we go along, adapting some orientation and mobility techniques that depending on their needs and what they're comfortable with of us going out to see people. And again, the more you see people, the more you're open for contamination or possible exposure to the virus that nobody knows that they might have. So we are trying to figure that out as we go along. So a lot of things will be changing in the next few months in regards to how we're providing orientation mobility services. We just haven't had enough experience to figure out all the pros and cons of what's going to work and what's not going to work. And again, orientation mobility is very unique to the individual that we're working with. So that hasn't changed. It usually we can adapt to any situation that we need to. I'm going to stop right now because I'm really interested in some of the questions that people have.
Okay. Carl, go right ahead, Carl.
Yeah. Hi, Meg. This is Carl. I'm getting some questions from the deafblind community. What do you do for folks in terms of orientation and mobility for them where verbal cueing doesn't necessarily work?
Well, mobility purposes, we would still have to be working with the interpreters. We're learning some, one of the benefits from this break is a lot of my staff have been taking a lot of different trainings that we really didn't have time to do. And one of them is called haptics. And in regards to how to communicate with someone from behind and making them stop. And again, a lot of this is all reviewed with an interpreter before the lesson starts. I do something with your shoulder or your back and I make a mark or a sign of some sort that's tactile to tell you, you stop, turn left, turn right. Give them an indication. So we're not doing hand over hand signing with the interpreter and them and us. So we're lessening our interpreting ability that we need to do. So that's what we're going to be working on. That is a big issue for the deafblind community in general with the signing and if they're tactile signers. So we're working with the interpreters and trying to make as we go along.
And how about someone like myself where I'm not really proficient in sign, and if you're more than 6 feet away, I start to have trouble hearing. And if you're wearing a mask, you're blocking clear speech.
Yeah, and that is a problem with the mask, which we kind of anticipate. We are looking at getting more some additional adaptive equipment, such as an FM receiver to be wearing, Bose bone conductor headphones that may be connected to your hearing aids, that you can hear us talk into it using an iPhone or some kind of adaptive equipment that you may have, or we would look at what equipment we have to get to make that work for you. Does that answer your question, Carl?
Yeah, that's fine. I guess I'm thinking more. I mean, I'm not so much worried about what the O&M instructors are going to do when they meet with their individuals. I'm thinking more about what members, and not necessarily me. I'm lucky I can, you know, I have a wife who does most of my shopping and stuff, but I'm more worried about deafblind individuals or hard of hearing blind individuals who live by themselves. How do they remain independent and still get help in the stores where they don't necessarily have specialized FM equipment? And I don't know that there's an answer. I've been struggling with trying to find it, research it. They may or may not be. It's just something that I've been thinking about. But it does answer my question as far as how you guys will approach it.
Yeah, and again, I think we've been talking to the Deafblind Unit and the agency in regards to what the issues are and trying to come up with solutions that, you know, that are creative and that are going to work. And I foresee that a lot of people are going to have to get a additional assistive technology that they haven't needed in the future. But, you know, that's my just my opinion.
Jeanette, please.
Meg, all of your suggestions sound great, but here's a scenario that nobody's touched on. One of the churches I go to is opening, and they have blocked off the areas you can't sit. Now, in a past life, I would have followed the pews and where they're putting the block-off options, I could easily find them. However, I'm sure I will not be allowed to touch the edges of those pews, even with the mask. And social distancing won't really work because in places like church or in-person meetings, silence will be the order of the day. I'm curious if there are any thoughts besides calling IRI, which I could do, about how anyone with those kinds of limitations could get the assistance they need.
So I would have a discussion with the church in regards to where the placements of how they're separating it, the pews and whatnot.
I did, and I was told someone will help you, but that defies the whole issue of social distancing because they can't be 6 feet away to assist me.
Well, again, the 6 feet away is if you are not wearing a mask. That's the two separate things. One is they want you to stay 6 feet away without a mask. And if you can't, you're supposed to be wearing a mask.
Yes, but as you well know, in a church setting, people are not going to want us to be holding on to their back because we may decide that's okay. But most people that I know that are doing social distancing do not see wearing a mask and being closer than 6 feet as a viable option. So it's just food for thought.
Yeah. And, you know, what I also recommend, because we had talked about, I did some things for TIC in regards to mobility minutes on suggestions. And one of the things, the issue was, is gloves, wearing gloves and or hand sanitizer. And that may be one thing that you could do is you wear gloves and someone might be comfortable guiding you. And then when you get to your pew, you take the gloves off and then have a plastic bag with you and throw them in. And then when you leave, which leaving would probably be easier because then you could just use your cane and go your way out, your normal way out. But getting to the pew that you need to get to, somebody would have to give you direction and guide you. But you could trail the pews with your gloved hand as well. And I don't know how they're dividing the pews at this point. I haven't seen what the different churches are doing. But you could be gloved and holding somebody's arm. So they're comfortable and you're wearing a mask and that's comfortable. But you're right, there are going to be people that may not be comfortable doing that at all. And that would have to be a discussion with the church and see if you could get somebody that's assigned that would be comfortable and it's not a awkward discussion when you get to church. That somebody you know has already said, okay, I can do that with a glove or you're wearing a mask and I'm wearing a mask. and see how that goes. We certainly, if you want the church to call me or the volunteers at the church to call me, I certainly will be willing to talk to them and give them some other suggestions on getting around. One of the things I didn't bring up about the gloves and the hand sanitizer, because I've been thinking about this for a while, and I've used gloves when I've gone out, but then I forget what I've touched and whatnot, and I'm really worrying about cross-contamination. So really, I'm going with the option of always using hand sanitizer, having it with me, and when I leave the building or wherever I am, I use a hand sanitizer when I leave, and then as I enter the building or just before I enter, if I'm not touching a door, I use the hand sanitizer. And to me, it's easier to keep track than taking gloves on and off all the time. But certainly having an extra pair of gloves would be helpful, I think.
I think we have time for one more question.
Mary, please.
Hi. Thanks, Meg. I'm wondering, any suggestions? I'm imagining that when, you know, more and more businesses start to reopen and, you know, we start to go out, that there's going to be, you know, a lot of businesses will be establishing like markings on the floor to establish distancing for customers mm-hmm. coming in. And I'm wondering, you know, how as blind people and using our canes, I mean, I'm hoping that these markings will have some tactile indicator so that we know, but they may not. And I know there's going to be a lot of visual signage around, which of course will be useless for us. So any suggestions as to how to handle, you know, that, or suggestions we can make to a business as to how to make it more accessible?
So that's a really good point. And we're still kind of trying to figure that one out at this point. Most of the markings will be just tape on the floor, so it won't be tactual. We've been talking about that in my National Orientation and Mobility group, looking for a type of tactile distinctive tape that would be more detectable underfoot and with your cane. And right now we haven't really found a solution that's a quick and cheap solution for people other than getting their duct tape or masking tape, whatever they're using on the floor. So at this point, I would say that usually the tape is a different color. So you could look at if you visually can see the tape, you may be able to follow the one-way aisles. But when I've gone to the store, I've gone up the wrong aisle without paying attention, really, and realize I'm going up the wrong way and I have to turn around and go back. So even visually, you don't always pick it up. You may have to get then more assistance if you are going into the stores that are that have that set up. With the 6-foot distance, like you have to queue in line before you go into the store, that is going to be a problem. And you're going to have to be more verbal to let people know, could you tell me when you move up and then let me know when I'm at the 6-foot distance. If there's a line, mm-hmm. going to be a line if you're standing outside the store. So someone should be able to give you some verbal information. But at this point, there isn't any type of delineator that I know of that would solve that problem for you. That will be a problem. And if you're aware of it, you can talk to the store. If it's a regular store you go into and ask them, how do I address this? And they might say, well, give us a call when you come in and we'll have a staff assist you or give you direction. I think trying to contact the stores ahead of time and seeing what their policy is in assisting and what their expectation of you is, that would be really helpful. I mean, you know, as we know, most people think blind people don't live by themselves. They always have somebody to help out. Mm-hmm. We know that's not true, but that's their assumption and kind of, you know, it's almost a good advocacy in regards to talking to the store managers and trying to come up with a solution that you go at a time that there is very limited people there. There is staff to help you. Some of the folks have told me they've had really good interactions with stores. I haven't heard of a negative one, but I'm sure there's one out there. But I think just showing up and expecting, knowing that there may be an issue, because with the tape and the 6 foot distancing, there isn't any way that you could find it with your cane, and your guide dog's not going to pick it up. So that will be a problem.
Mm-hmm. David, before we close down questions, this is Brian speaking as president of Bay State Council. One of the things I hope the commission is involved in doing is to try to be as proactive in some of these issues, as opposed to waiting to be reactive about them. One example that concerns me quite a bit is when in 2 or 3 weeks, when restaurants start moving their services out onto the sidewalk and into the street, suddenly moving down the sidewalk, which used to be a relatively safe activity, becomes a much more complicated thing to pull off. So as the world around us makes alterations to meet the needs of the average person, making sure that the Commission for the Blind is busy advocating with those making these policies that they take into consideration the not average person, such as ourselves.
Brian, thank you for bringing that up. That's one thing for people to be aware of if their cities and towns are changing their rules. The one thing that I noticed, and I could be wrong, but what they seem to be doing is they're not going to be blocking the sidewalk. They're going to be blocking a parking. They're going to be in the street, the extended outdoor seating. That's not going to be 100% true, I know, but there is I'm aware of it, and we've just been starting to, there is something through a national agency, which I haven't read the whole document, about talking about this whole issue in regards to accessibility and guidelines for cities and towns if they're going to do that expansion into the streets. But my understanding, and I know the city of Boston is quite adamant about this, is keeping that pathway, public pathway, free of obstacles as you're walking. It will be, unfortunately, we have 351 towns in Massachusetts, so they always do something totally different. So outreach to that, I've been working with the Mass Office on Disability in regards to making cities and towns aware of some accessibility issues that do impact our individuals through the Commission for the Blind. So if you do hear of a town that's doing something and it's not working, we do outreach, but we don't reach everybody, or we don't reach the right people that end up doing it. So certainly advocate, let me know, and then I can call the town and advocate if they haven't got the notification from MLD. So you're right. We do outreach, Brian, but we don't always get to the right person, unfortunately. But that's something we're going to be paying attention as cities and towns change their regulations. I know Needham is changing. They're moving tables out to their common on the grass area. So people can do takeout and eat like in an outdoor cafe, though it's just going to be picnic tables. So each town is adapting differently, and it'll be interesting on seeing how they fix that. But my understanding of what I've seen so far is that they're not taking space on the sidewalk. They're taking space from the street. So that's a good thing.
Thank you, Meg. Always interesting, especially interesting these days. And we'll certainly be looking forward to, getting more communication with the MCB as we all try to figure out, one, identify what these challenges are, because as you said, things are going to pop up that nobody even thought about. But then also, more importantly, how we deal with them. So once again, thank you for being with us today. and always interesting.
Well, thanks for having me, David. And if anybody is having a unique orientation mobility problem, because we got a lot of things that are going to be coming up that, again, we haven't anticipated, definitely let me know and we can get an orientation mobility specialist out to check on something if there's something that's becoming an issue for you. We are definitely going to, you know, address them as we go along. And the more I hear about it, the more I can advocate on different levels in the state if there's something that is becoming a problem. So I appreciate you letting me take up this a part of your meeting.